Welcome to Geological's mini-series dedicated to sports and orthopedic acupuncture. For the next few days, I'll be bringing you several podcasts a day from the Sports Acupuncture Alliance's conference in San Jose, California. In addition to interviews and discussions with speakers of the conference, you'll also be hearing from participants, and you'll have a special front row seat at a roundtable conversation around the issues of running a sports medicine practice. The Sports Acupuncture Alliance was created to promote the study and practice of sports and orthopedic acupuncture. I'm delighted that they were willing to partner with Geological to bring you this mini-series so that those of you who were not able to attend the conference could learn from the speakers as well as the participants and to get a taste of what it's like to be here at this special event. Please enjoy these discussions and take what you learn here and use it in your clinic. These conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Worried that an EMR is too complex for you? Jane has friendly and knowledgeable support. Mayway Herbs is celebrating the 55th year of their family business. You're invited to make use of their vast library of resources. Are you concerned about the health of Mother Earth? AccuFast Needles is doing something about that. You can too. And later in the show, Ancestral Sturman offers up a sinew treatment, and the folks at Blue Poppy have something special to share as well. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Geological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Yvonne Lau, president of Mayway Herbs. Our family business turns 55 this year, and we wouldn't have gotten this far without the love and support of our community. We're truly grateful and promise you that we'll continue to work hard to support you and your practice. Please visit Mayway.com to find the perfect Pumsar brand formula or formulate your own in our dispensary. Our site also has lots of articles, videos, and herbal recipes for you to explore. And tune into our podcast, Chinese Medicine Matters, for insightful discussions on all things TCM. Learn about treatment strategies and powerful herbal remedies. As we welcome the month of May, our focus is on women's health. Our newsletter articles and podcast episodes this month will highlight different aspects and unique challenges women face. So subscribe or tune in. And if you're a practitioner, get a discount on our women's health formulas this month. Just visit Mayway.com. This season and every season, trust Mayway Herbs for your health and wellness needs. And thank you for supporting Real Chinese Medicine.
I love how technology can help to automate my office, and I want to share with you my favorite tool for doing so, Jane. Jane is a clinic management software in EMR with a human touch. Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get software, you get a whole team. Included in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live. If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team. And be sure to mention the code Geological at the time of sign up for a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. I don't know about you, but sometimes I take a step back and marvel at my acupuncture needles. I mean, they're the world's simplest medical tool, a sharpened wire and a handle. That's it. And with this simple tool, hundreds of health conditions can be resolved. I love it. What I didn't love was the amount of packaging waste I generated at the end of the day. But that has now changed too. Ever since I switched to AccuFast Earth-Friendly Needles, I reduced my packaging waste by 90%. Not only are they a great needle, but the folks at AccuFast plant a tree for every two boxes of needles I use in the clinic. By switching to AccuFast Needles, you'll be helping patients, planting trees, and joining a community of practitioners changing the world. Like our simple needle, being a part of the solution, it's simple too. Visit AccuFastNeedles.com/geological to learn how. Hi, I'm here with Whitfield Reeves, who's one of the speakers here at the Sports Acupuncture Alliance's conference. Hey, Whit, you've been doing acupuncture since 1981. That is a long time. I'm curious, what are some of the changes and some of the trends that you're seeing with sports acupuncture these days?
Well, I would say the biggest thing that comes to mind is that the patient is very different in this era than the patient was in 1981. In 1981, the patient presented signs and symptoms very differently, and the evolution of the disease and the pathophysiology was very different even just 30 years ago. Very much so.
And what were you seeing back then that's different than today?
Well, nobody had a computer. So there was no keyboarding. There were no devices. People weren't on electronics, you know. And so, number one, we did not have the postural component of the rhomboid miners engaging to retract the scapula, pull the scapula back. And we didn't have problems with the forward head looking down at devices. So that's one huge piece. And people didn't sit as long and often in desks. A lot of people had real jobs and worked and did things, you know.
Now so people moved more. There was a whole different movement diet.
Absolutely. You know, and I just read an article 3 days ago about, it was JAMA or one of the major journals that was looking at exercise. And they actually concluded that it didn't matter if you moved a little bit or if you did intense cardio, sweating, burning, if you ran a marathon or if you walked down to the store, the difference in health by the various ways they were measuring it was not that great. And so back then, people were moving much more, and a desk job where you just sat all day long was much less common. And so the gluteus medius is what comes to mind of a muscle that gets turned off in the seated position. And so now we've got all these back problems, all of these degenerative disc disease, all these bulging discs and deterioration of the lower lumbar spine. And you just didn't see that in 1981 like that. You saw people who were shoveling, you know, and lifting, and they strained their back from lifting and twisting, but not from slightly moving. That was the, you know, straw that broke the camel's back from someone who's been sitting at a desk job for 10 years, you know, programming a computer with their head forward. And that's a huge, huge difference.
So it sounds like what's happening is people are moving less. We have very different physiologies, and we're in many ways much weaker than we were back in the 80s. Do I have that right? Is that what's going on?
I would say you have that partially right. We are weaker in certain very key places, like the muscles that retract the shoulders, pull the shoulders back, the muscles that pull the head back, the muscles that stabilize the pelvis that get inactivated by sitting. But in other areas that were hugely stronger, as many people work out and train, and CrossFit is an example. So it isn't quite so, it's not like we're weaker, but we're weaker in very key postural areas. And if someone doesn't work on that, if they're not in Pilates or in yoga or some sort of discipline where that gets addressed, it becomes problematic, hugely problematic.
So the injuries are different these days.
Yes and no. There is, for instance, in 1981, I did not know how to treat the rhomboid minor or the gluteus medius to activate and stabilize the shoulder, neck and shoulder, or the lumbar spine. I just didn't know how to do it. And I didn't think about doing it because it didn't seem like that was what was presenting, but I well could have not been educated enough at that time, learned enough to know that.
Well, there certainly is that. We learn as we go.
Yeah. So, but the other thing, and I think this is also very important, is that the prolonged exposure to what I would call artificial environment. I mean, in a sense, I'm really a Taoist and I love being in nature and I love like being in California. I go to the sequoias and I just lay on the ground next to one of those massive trees and the energy is just incredible. And so I love nature and I see that in the Taoist tradition, how important the union of heaven and earth is the human. And as we don't have enough earth because we're sitting in chairs and offices with artificial climate control and fluorescent lights and the sort, we get imbalanced. And I think that what happens is the neurologic system starts overreacting to any stimulus. You can see the overreaction just in the personality of people who have gotten shorter and agitated and angry in relationships where one of the two spouses is overreacting to the other spouse. And so you can see this kind of behavior in this combativeness. And on a physiological level, we're talking about neurologic overbearing or overreaction to stimulus. So somebody gets a strain, as in tennis elbow. And in 1981, tennis elbow, three treatments, and the patient was fixed. Now, you get a tennis elbow patient on a computer programmer, and you don't know if it's going to take 6 months to get this person fixed. And so the neurologic system, I think, has reacted and has overreacted and created pockets of stagnation all over the body, wherever things are not right posturally or from injury, trauma, repetitive stress, and the sort. And so you get pockets of chi and blood stagnation, which then gets to your original question, what's different? And what's different is in 1981, Master Tong and the empirical points of Chinese medicine, of Chinese acupuncture, were marvelously effective. They were just brilliant. You know, one, two needle treatments and people get fixed. And every decade, it's gotten about 10% less effective. And so 10, 20 years into this, the many of these points, for me, and I'm only talking my experience, I don't know what somebody else does, but my experience is that those stagnations are so fixed that you can't go to a distal point and move the chi because there's no blood flow getting into that area where the pain and the stagnation and, you know, the injury has occurred. And so no chi, no blood, you know, no blood, no chi.
I mean, it sounds like local treatment's really helpful. You get in there and bust that up. I'm really struck here what you're saying about this overreaction of the neurological system, because what it sparks in my mind is increasingly we see lots of autoimmune disease as well.
Exactly.
That sounds like just the other side of an over-amped neurological system. The system's just sort of turning on itself, does not know what to do with itself.
Absolutely. I think it's the same mechanism, and I know so little about internal medicine that I couldn't speak knowledgeably about that. But I think you've got it precisely articulated. Yes.
Well, so that leads me to this question. And knowing something about internal medicine or not, it sounds like you've got your eye on this. You're working with it. You see it's present. You're taking that into consideration in the work you do. So what are you doing to help dial down the nervous system? so that people can have enough stillness to maybe move some chi and blood and have a little quiet time to actually heal?
Oh boy, you're asking the impossible, you know. I mean, how do we ask our patients to live in a way that's different than the dictates of our current culture? It's very, very complicated. It's very, very difficult. And I have reached the place where I just don't feel like I can change that. You know, the psyche, the communal psyche of this country especially, is such that, you know, I can't change that. I can't change the way people are reacting to the world because of these powerful forces of greed and consumption and the sort. So I just try to fix pain. And if the patient will listen to me, I'll try to get them to go on a vacation or maybe even meditate if they're open to this. But I don't have a solution for that. The ultimate problem that you're talking about, I don't know. So I just have to exist within the confines of what I'm given, and I do the best that I can. And it just isn't as easy as it was 30 years ago.
Right. So you don't add in some sort of spirit points or do something that tries to dial down the reactivity. You're working on the blood and chi of the presenting problem and letting that sort of reverberate through the system.
Pretty much, yeah. If I think that a patient really needs internal medicine, of course they all do, I refer them out. I'm not skilled enough to do a good job of point selection and, of course, herbal prescribing. So I'll refer that out. That's the best that I can do. But I do love the formula Jia Wei Xiao Yao San. I mean, Jia Wei Xiao Yao San to me is the formula of the era. You know, it harmonizes the liver. It clears the heat in the liver. It nourishes some of the liver. It does a lot towards addressing this neurological stress sort of related reaction in the body. So of any one formula, that just stands out as just, you know, a really great way to start with someone. But
yeah, we all have our favorites for those,
yeah.
Don't we?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm kind of a Chai Hu Shugan San guy myself.
Well, both of those are so close, you know, so similar.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
And I do use that formula, by the way, often as depending on the patient. So yes, that all fits into that category of harmonizing.
You know, it's so reassuring and validating to hear what you say, that people are different today than they were back in the 80s. I mean, I remember before screens, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we all had this little computer in our hand. And certainly I watch what it's done to people's attention. I watch what it does to their posture. I mean, you describe it really well with what it does to the rhomboids and neck postures and things like that. You've seen these incredible changes that it's like we're co-evolving with technology, and it's having a big impact on our physiology. So it leads me to wondering about what else about acupuncture, and maybe orthopedic in particular, because this is your sweet spot and the thing you love. What are some things about acupuncture that you now believe that you didn't believe 10 years ago?
Wow. Good question. Well, I get down to very simple things. And so my work is very simple. Anybody who's taken my acupuncture sports medicine apprenticeship program knows that I sift things down to very simple, easy to understand assessments and treatments. So what stands out to me is the power of the acupuncture needle that when it is put in the right place, precisely to the millimeter in the right place, that whatever the barrier is to the flow of blood in this area of stagnation, that the well-placed needle is absolutely miraculous. So that generally speaking, treatments don't take 6 to 10 treatments cumulatively to fix something. It often takes one treatment, and that treatment might happen on the first day, or it might happen on the 10th day, depending upon your fortune and your karma and your skill and what it is you're doing. But the precision of all of it is what has kind of marked the last 10 years for me. And I was criticized in a doctoral program teaching that I was too Eurocentric. And I am a white guy, you know, I'm really white, you know, so I could understand some of my work may appear Eurocentric, but I spent a little bit of time saying, okay, I have to listen to this criticism or critique, and I have to really look at it. So I dug into a very simple text by Mao Xing Ni, Master Ni's son, his translation of the Huangdi Neiqing Su Wen. And I just started reading through stuff. And I always have this quote right in my hand. I have it in my hand right now. And this is one little section where Qi Po says, "What is meant by acupuncturing the bone level, but not injuring the tendons?" And the emperor responds, the physician responds, "When needling deeply, do not stop at the level of the tendons before reaching the bone level. Go all the way in one breath or a series of breaths, depending on your technique, but reach that depth without removing the needle. When needling to the depth of the tendons, one can avoid injuring the muscles by inserting past them. This logic follows with each specific level. The needle must go to the proper depth. Any depth other than the correct one will cause undesirable effects."
Hello everyone, Anne Cecil Sturman here. A working knowledge of the 8 extraordinary channels from the unbroken oral tradition of acupuncture is valuable beyond words. The power of these channels is tremendous if the practitioner has well integrated diagnostic, theoretical, and practical skill. You'll be familiar with Dumai, the governor channel or the Sea of Yang, the primal reservoir of Yang, which ultimately finances all movement and growth. But this channel also governs the ability to self-determine. The psycho-emotional presentation of your patients can be matched to a classical activation of this channel, clearing impedance in the free flow of Yang Qi to body, mind, and spirit. I'd like to share with you the marvelous potency of the Du channel in a full-length live treatment video from the seminar I taught last year in Melbourne, Australia. It's at annececilsturman.com/sinews2024. Click on the Jump to Free Teaching button or see the link on my Instagram page at Anne Cecil Sturman. Thanks, Michael. Back to you.
This is the precision you're talking.
This is the precision. Now, I have no idea what all of that meant above of needling past the tendons and et cetera, et cetera. And it went on and on in ways that I couldn't understand it. But I did understand that each of these layers of anatomical tissue were being clearly described, and that the needle must go to the proper depth, and any other one than the correct will cause undesirable effects. That's what struck me. And I went, you know what? What we're doing is traditional Chinese medicine through and through, and Eurocentric or not, everything we're doing is backed up in the classics.
So how is it that you were accused of being Eurocentric?
Oh, so many people love, well, you have to feel the pulse or you have to treat the Zangfu, you're not really going to the problem. People forget this simple fact. The cause of disease, it can be exogenous, wind, heat, cold, damp, etc. The causes of disease can be endogenous, the emotions, or the cause of disease is other. And in the other causes of disease are accident and trauma. And people are always trying to go to look at the Zangfu, the emotional state, trying to find this root, you know, this Zangfu root for this disease, when the cause of disease is trauma. Treat the trauma.
Treat the trauma, yeah. Or just treat the, I mean, one of the great things that Dr. Tan would always talk about is forget the Zangfu. What's the channel that's involved? What is the tissue that's involved?
Yeah.
And get that dialed in.
And I need to criticize that or critique that from the standpoint that that was very effective 30 years ago. But if you get on the right channel, the right meridian, but the trauma or the stagnation, it is fibrotic and walled off from the rest of the body, you can activate that channel, but it's not going to get better if there's no blood flow and therefore no chi into that pocket of, say, if it's a tendinitis or a tendinosis with fibrosis, you know? So that is what has changed so much of my thinking, that the meridians are no longer, for me, as functional as they used to be when I first got into practice. Just put in a couple of distal points and patient's better. Now it's like, well, that's not working because there's fibrosis and stagnation that is so enclosed and no longer integrated into the system of the body, and that local area needs to be opened up.
With that, totally makes sense. I mean, I'm thinking about some cases in my own clinic, and I'm thinking, wow, yeah. I mean, and sometimes I can palpate, and you can feel this gooey stuff, or there's areas really striated, things like that. So what do you do? Is this a matter of distal and local, or are you using palpation? How do you suss out these pockets of stagnation and liberate them?
I love the language, suss them out and liberate them. I would say that in order to understand where that stagnation is, orthopedic testing is more reliable than any other way of assessment that I know in general. So for instance, if you have a tendinitis or you have a nodule on a tendon and you've got pain, you know, in the tendon and what have you, you can needle above and below on the meridian and nothing happens. And it's because of this fibrotic nodule. But in this particular case, actually I'm talking in circles, but this particular case is very clear because you find the lesion, you palpate the lesion, and treatment is fairly simple. If above and below and distal aren't fixing that, then there's no blood. You have to needle locally. However, what about the things like a rotator cuff injury that refers pain out into the deltoid? You can needle the deltoid, LI-15, LI-14, Sanjiao-14, Sanjiao-13. You can needle the deltoid till the cows come home, and it's not going to fix the problem. The problem is back in the supraspinatus or the infraspinatus in the Taiyang area of the body. And so by orthopedic testing, you can determine that there's dysfunction in, say, the supraspinatus. That's just my favorite muscle, and that's what always comes up. There's dysfunction in the supraspinatus, and then you translate that into Jinglo. That's the Taiyang meridian, small intestine 12. And then you look for where those nodules or stagnations or trigger points or what have you are within the context of that muscle tendon unit. It could be tendon, it could be muscle, it could be muscle belly, it could be muscle tendon junction, but at least you know about where the stagnation is. So you're not wasting your time needling into tissue that's really actually not the problem.
Right. Like you said, you got to be precise.
And so the meridian idea works great when the problem, the pain is on the meridian and everything lays out perfectly. But when you have a referral pattern going from one area to a whole nother area, the meridian becomes exceedingly ineffective. And I would say how I came about this was that in my early years, 81, 82, 83 of treating patients, I would needle bladder 23, bladder 25, bladder 40, bladder 60 to treat back pain, lumbar pain, and it wasn't very effective. As a matter of fact, it was really less than placebo, you know? And little by little, as I came to understand things, meeting Janet Travell in 1983 certainly helped significantly, you know, tune my attention to the muscles and trigger points and the anatomy and the function of those muscles, that you would then realize that much of back pain is due to the quadratus lumborum, which is almost on the side, and it's a Xiaoyang muscle. And so treating those Taiyang, treating Taiyang all day long. Back in the old days in China, the cold would just drain the kidneys of these individuals, and they would have low back pain due to the kidney. But that's not what we see. You know, we see other cause of disease, strain, lifting, twisting, strain, and it's not a kidney problem. And so treating the bladder and the kidney till the cows come home doesn't really do much in my experience. Now, maybe other people get great results with that, but I would say the number one reason why people come to my apprenticeship program is in about 3 or 4 or 5 years of practice, they come in and they say, I've been doing bladder 23, bladder 25, bladder 40, bladder 60. It's not working. And I need a different perspective because things aren't really clinically resolving as I thought they would. And I'm a really good student and I've studied hard and I'm doing everything that I was taught, but it's not working the way.
It's not doing what it's supposed to do. Yeah. There always comes that point where we've got these maps in our head, you know, or these ideas, and they kind of work. But then at a certain point, it's like you have to throw the map away and start navigating with a compass.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And it sounds like the compass that you use is various orthopedic testing and really paying attention to what is connected to what.
Yeah. Visual, postural assessment, palpation, literally palpating along a muscle, trying to find if there's a bursa that's inflamed, or rolling across a tendon to see if there's a tendon problem. But yeah, orthopedic testing, manual muscle testing, visual observation, and palpation with my hands to find out where the problem is.
Yeah, going to the source, using the body to assess the body.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I learned something early on. I was very fortunate to learn this early on from a nurse practitioner that I worked with. And I was really struggling with a case. And she looked at me and she said, Whit, you're thinking that this patient has a really rare, strange, and peculiar disease. And you're trying to be the hero to figure out what the diagnosis is, and you're going to come up with something that none of the other specialists could come up with.
Yeah, dude, your house.
Yeah. But statistics would say that in 80 to 90% of the time, the patient will present with a very typical and common disease or condition and present with atypical symptoms, which then tells you that, say, in treating pain and injury, we can narrow things down to 25 injuries that cover, you know, 80, 90% of all the problems we see. No matter how the patient presents, it's probably going to be one of these top 25 or 30 injuries or tissues or muscles or what have you, you know, because those are statistically where the stresses are and where the stagnations occur. And then once you learn that, everything becomes so simple. You know, you could do it in your sleep.
Well, you know, it makes so much sense. You know, we're sitting here having this conversation, and I'm thinking to myself, partly because I'm kind of a lazy guy, I've always been sort of an 80-20 guy, right? I'm looking for that 20% of something that's going to get me 80% of the result that I'm looking for. And I always chalked it up to being lazy, but I'm listening to you speak about this, and I realize, but it's also true. I mean, it's so often 20% of the cases are, I'm sorry, 80% of the cases are probably going to cover 20% of the issues.
Yeah, yeah. Right? You're brilliant. You've got it figured out. Then you've just got to make sure you know what those 20 conditions or 20%, right, you know.
Know when the exception shows up.
Yeah, yeah.
What are some things that tip you off that there's an exception?
I'm not sure I can answer that question. I think I would have to hear that question within the context of a specific.
Yeah, something specific. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit too, that's asking a little too much of me. I don't think I can.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's so, and for me, this is the difference between theory and practice, because, you know, we can have these nice ideas, but really it's the nitty gritty where this stuff comes together. And so speaking of that, you know, and you were talking about earlier about, you know, treating the lumbar back pain with the, you know, the usual sets of points. What about like the Jingwell points on the tendinomuscular channels? And what about things like the Sheikleff points that are supposedly so famous for treating pain? Mm-hmm. How do you see those playing in our modern acupuncture world these days?
I start with always considering bleeding a Jingwell point of the meridian or meridians involved. That's the first step that I think of, even if it's just going to clear off a level of stagnation in the tendinomuscle meridian on the more surface of the body, it's a start. And many patients will kind of go, oh, that feels better. How'd you do that? It doesn't get all the way down to maybe a tendon to bone junction. That might be too deep for the tendinomuscle meridian. But I very much like to start, if applicable and if indicated, bleeding one or more Jingwell points. I like to bleed with a lancet, and I like 10 drops of blood. So that's what I do with the Jingwell point. But yeah, it's the first thing that I think of after I've made this orthopedic or made this assessment, and I know what tissue is involved, and then I have translated that tissue into the right meridian. So that, for instance, if it's a disc issue with pain going down the gallbladder channel, but the problem is in the spine, I'm not bleeding the gallbladder channel Jingwell point, because that's not where the problem is. The problem is in the spine, you know. So you do have to make sure with referred pain, you're not bleeding a Jingwell point of where the referred pain is. You want to bleed the Jingwell point where the stagnation and injury is. And so often it's the same, you know, in the case of like shin splints, anterior shin splints, it's stomach 45. It's right along the stomach meridian. And, you know, it's a no-brainer, you know. Mm-hmm. But sometimes with referred pain, it can get a little more complex. So you have to make sure you do that right.
In recent years, the Saam acupuncture style has generated significant interest and a loyal and growing following. In the Saam approach, a precise diagnosis leads to a four-needle treatment to address the five element and six chi imbalances in the body.
The four needles target the controlling and generating cycles. It's common using this method for the needle sensation to be stronger than in many other styles. Thus, the choice of needle becomes important. The Unico brand of needles lends itself to both strong and gentle techniques. These superior needles are made of uncoated Japanese surgical stainless steel and feature the best guide tube on the market with its unique beveled edge. Additionally, Unico needles have a tensile property that helps with freehanding needles into Jingwell points and allows you to more easily feel the arrival of qi. Blue Poppy is the exclusive importer and distributor of Unico needles. Use the code QI2024 to save 10% off Unico needles at www.bluepoppy.com. You'll be glad you did.
You got to make sure you're on the right meridian. You're not
absolutely
getting, you're not following some red herring.
Yeah, not where the pain is, but where
you go for where the problem is.
Yeah. And then then you mentioned the qi clap points. Really, after bleeding the Jingwell point, I'll usually look to see if there's an empirical point of some other trick that might work. An empirical point, Ling Gu Da Bai or Yao Tong Shui or, you know, any of those type of points. People who've studied with Master Dong's system, they have tons of options there. So I'll often try that before I start needling into the local area, because it gives you a chance for them to move it while the needle's in the empirical point or the opposite side or something. But once I've exhausted like the qi clef point and the empirical points and the Jingwell point, then it gets into local and adjacent. And that's where 70% of the time the treatment will evolve to include the local and adjacent points.
Right. So it sounds like you kind of work from the edges into the center.
Exactly. Yeah. And I learned that the hard way a number of times.
A number of times. I'm so glad I'm not alone.
Yeah. More than once, for sure. You got to get swatted on the head a few times. But it was during the pre-Olympic period in Los Angeles, 1984, and I had a British tennis player who had pain around Sanjiao 4, so on the dorsal surface of the hand, on the extensor tendon around Sanjiao 4, and he had had surgery to have a sheath release, and they tried to get out, you know, all the fibrotic tissue from the problem. And I was so sure that there was still stagnation in that wrist. And I was threading needles along the tendons and trying all these tricks and, you know, doing these strategic little cups and stuff. And little cups were not that easy to find back in 1983, you know. And I treated him four or five times and nothing happened. And finally, I just got desperate. I went, I've got to fix this guy, you know? So I thought, I remember upper lower treatment. So there you have treat the wrist with the ankle. So I went to the opposite side ankle. Sanjiao 4 is the yuan source point. So I went to gallbladder 40 yuan source point on the opposite side. I put a needle into gallbladder 40. He moved his wrist. And all the pain and all the decreased range, all the range of motion improved within 15 seconds. And it was just miraculous. And so he came back about 3 weeks later, said, oh, that treatment worked wonderfully. It's just starting to come back. But he came in and talked to me before he kind of signed in. He said, I just want to make sure all you're going to do is needle that point down in the ankle. You know, I don't want you to do any of this other stuff up in the wrist. You know, I know what works and that's all I want you to do. So it was so funny. The patient was just going to keep me from being so diligent that I was going to do bad treatment. He knew what good treatment was. And so I treated him maybe three times and it fixed it. And it went completely against my belief system that kind of thing had local stagnation and you can't get to it with the distal point. And You know, so that's why that you said outward to inward or from distal to local. That's why I kind of have this flow chart or this list that I can always look at. I have this in writing. It's in my book. And I have this progression of 10 techniques going from the Jingwell point to the local point. And I'm always looking at that just in case I think I'm smarter than the system. And so I'll look and I'll make sure that I at least consider the opposite side or upper lower or what have you. So I don't miss something thinking I'm going to go right to the local because I know that'll fix it. It usually does, but it doesn't always.
It doesn't always. Well, you know, you bring up the thought about belief system. And I think we all are benefited and challenged by this, right? Because we've got ideas and often the ideas work or they work to some degree. But then there's the times where we've got a belief about something. We think it goes a certain way, but it really doesn't. And it takes being wrong and somehow okay enough with being wrong that we can set that belief aside and pivot or try something different or, you know, something I read in Witt's book or something, you know, like this thing you gave us from the Huang Di Nei Jing earlier about needling directly to where it needs to go. Mm-hmm. So often we have to switch. And it makes me think about here at the conference, you're presenting on a contrarian approach to treating low back pain. I kind of like contrarians for some reason. I don't know why. I'm curious to know, how do you go, and this gets into belief system, I think, but how do you go about developing a contrarian eye that helps you to get over beliefs or vision or ideas that just need to be gotten over or set down or viewed from a different way? How do you develop that contrarian eye?
I think this gets back to one of your earlier questions about this battle we're fighting with the culture that we live in that sometimes is very detrimental to our mental, physical, and emotional and spiritual well-being. And so for me, I think what's most important is that the practitioner needs to have a discipline. And I personally think meditation is probably the most effective. For me, I'm a longtime meditator, and that's what meditation is you're just sitting in this moment, or you're sitting with the breath or what have you, and all you do is practice. Every time you start making the list of what you're going to do or what you're going to eat or who you forgot to call, you practice coming back to that focal point of the breath or what have you. And it's a very useful skill to help one in looking at the patient fresh every time. I'm looking at this as like, this is the first time we've ever seen each other. And I'm going to look at this fresh to see if I can develop what I need to develop and assess and treat the way I need to treat to help this person. So I think the discipline is in the mind of the practitioner. And I think it's really essential that this be the case. I don't talk about it at all in my training programs. I don't tell people they should meditate. I never even hardly bring it up. But I think it's probably the most important thing. And so from that place of being able to have this fresh look at things, then you can start to develop a clinical experience that's effective. And in the case of the back, it bladder 23, bladder 25, bladder 40, bladder 60 didn't work. The Huato Jiaji points didn't work. The dew points along the vertebral center line didn't work. And so I had to kind of go, okay, if I'm honest with myself, this is not working very well. And thereby, then let's develop something else. And nobody else is telling me to do this. Nobody else. And that's what makes it contrarian, is that you have to jump into the river without anybody else there. You have to be willing to be hanging in the abyss, you know, and it's the only way that you're ever going to be good is you've just got to hang in the abyss with terrifying loneliness and extraordinary terror of failing because you're doing something that's just not what they told you to do.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds too, sometimes it's recognizing the failure that we're already in the middle of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And waking up to that and then finding something else. Well, Whit, I so appreciate your time, taking some time out here at the conference to speak with me and to share this with the listeners of Cheological. Any closing comments that you'd like to leave us with before we get back to the activities around here?
Whoa, closing comments. Well, certainly we're so pleased that so many people, so many practitioners want to look at this community that we've formed here of anatomical, orthopedic, and sports medicine practitioners. And they're all different. The orthopedic practitioners are different from the sports medicine acupuncturist in certain ways, you know. But we all share a common basis of needing to know something about anatomy and movement, our assessment and treatment plans. And that is not articulated in Chinese medicine as the dictates that we get from what's translated into English or even what's still only in Chinese. But to me, it's so important because as we began this conversation of how different my patients are now from 1981, when I first started practice, imagine how different we all are from 1072, the year of the bronze statue, and the compendium of the bronze statue, where all the acupuncture points were presented in their entirety, except for extraordinary points that were added after that. So that's over 1,000 years, and I'm seeing change in 30 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, things are different, and we have to question. And we have to question Chinese medicine while we still love it, and we love the dictates of Chinese medicine. But we have to understand that it's not perfect and it needs to be added to. And what we're doing with an anatomical, orthopedic, and a sports approach is that we're just adding this incredible breadth to Chinese medicine and especially acupuncture. We're not creating a new acupuncture. We're just adding to the centuries-old lineage that we've all been able to tap into and to be part of. And so I'm very appreciative that so many people would come to this conference because they too are looking for community. They've had their failures and felt alone. And sometimes the texts don't tell them what they need to know to fix something because it's a modern something that needs a different point of view. And so everybody is looking, and the community is completely open. There's nobody in charge. There's not a boss. There's not a guru. There's just a number of people that range from teachers to students. And eventually the students will be the teachers as all that goes forward. It's a beautiful system.
Well, there's a lot of lit up people here.
Yeah.
Whit, thank you so much. And I'll see you around the conference.
Good. Thank you, Michael, very much. You're doing wonderful work and keep it up.
Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Cheological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.